Good morning, and thank you for coming here today. As Dr. Haig said, I have just begun a position of Bayer Crop Science. However, the past 3 years I've been working for Dr. Jane Deaver's Public Cotton Breeding Program at Texas A&M AgriLife Research in Lubbock. It's where I've done my graduate research, and that's what I'm going to be speaking on today, tackling genetically engineered adventitious presence in cotton breeding nurseries, development of reverse herbicide-tolerant trait selection. So working for a breeding program, I realized one of the main issues that breeders face today is the unintended genetically engineered gene flow to cotton breeding nurseries. We also refer to that as the adventitious presence of traits, or AP, in the breeding stock. And this can be surprising since cotton is self-pollinated. However, studies show it can frequently cross-pollinate up to 30% row-to-row and even at distances over 1 mile. This is even a bigger issue for public breeding programs where their nurseries are being planted right next to a lot of research planting commercial cultivars that contain the multiple GE traits, and insects can easily cross-pollinate between the two. This project, we specifically focused on the glyphosate resistance traits. It's one of the most prominently adopted and used in the U.S. commercial cotton acreage. And the main issues with the adventitious presence is, one, if you know you've lost the purity of that breeding stock, that's a major issue right away. Also, most GE traits are patented technology, and you need licensing agreements to utilize those in your breeding material. So if you have AP, it can be a major legal issue. Most commercial traits today do not alter the morphological phenotype or the visual look of the plant. So when you look out in your nurseries, you cannot tell if there has been outcrossing or which plants contain AP and which ones do not. And that's one of the biggest issues, because the only way you can test for the traits is through genetic and molecular testing, which takes major resources from a breeding program and can carry many legal issues. So our objective was to see if we could develop a way to visually identify AP in the field through a accurate and cost-effective visual screening instead of having to go through the full molecular program. So how are we going to do this? We termed a grow-in spray. And the idea is you spray your nurseries with a low sublethal rate of glyphosate, however, one that's strong enough to still induce good visual injury. And then you hypothesize that any treated plants that do not show injury, that's because they contain a glyphosate-resistant plant and are an AP plant. But the question is, what is the sweet spot, or what's the best application to do this? What herbicide timing and rate? How many days after the application do you need to come do your rating, and how damaging is this? So I'm going to cover our 2014 field data, which is this one location in Lubbock, Texas, a Texas Tech research farm. And the experiment is a 3x3x5 factorial randomized complete block design. Our main factors are summarized in this table. The seed mixtures, we created a seed mixture of full conventional or untraded seed, and then a full Roundup Ready Flex or full glyphosate resistant seed. And we had two mixtures of each of pure of those. And then we created a 50-50 mixture of the two that would serve as like our AP mixture. We needed to know how many plants in each plot should be resistant to test our accuracy. We tested three glyphosate timings, so 5, 8, and 11 vegetative nodes, which is like pre-square, match head square, and pre-bloom. And within those timings, four rates and untreated control. If you assume a 32 ounce per acre glyphosate application is like commercial standard for weed control, these rates are a quarter, half, three quarter, and 1x of that rate. And then we tested two rating timings at 7 and 16 days after application, and used bowl counts, lint and seed yield, and seed quality measurements to determine the damage. The key is we want to find a sub-lethal application so we do not kill the susceptible plants, so we can still harvest seed off of those to advance the generation, but we also want the rate to be strong enough to see good visual injury. If we were doing a full glyphosate resistance breeding program, we'd use heavy lethal rates and eliminate everything except for what contained the trait. We want to keep the susceptible, therefore we termed reverse herbicide trait selection. So to give you an idea of how the ratings work, this is actually a 50-50 mixture plot, and visually you cannot tell which of those plants contain the trait and which ones do not. So that's why we induce the herbicide with your little backpack spray. And then you come back and do the ratings. In this case, we did 7 and 16 days later. And you inspect each plant individually, like I'm doing here, for herbicide injury. Glyphosate is amino acid synthesis inhibitor. The most injury you're going to see is chlorosis, abnormal growth, and fruit abortion. And I've highlighted that here. In the 7 days, you can see a nice new chlorotic leaf showing injury. And then it's harder to see here, but by 16 days, it's more obvious the plants are stunted and full chlorosis. And then up here, you see there's no injury at all. The plants look nice, green, healthy. We assume those resistant plants. Now, in our ratings, we selected 5 plants that were susceptible or showed injury and 5 plants that did not show injury to test and confirm that we are selecting for the trait. And we also harvested those plants at the end of the year to use the seed for seed quality testing. And we used the chi-squared analysis to determine if our visual phenotyping was accurate. And the two observed categories would be the number of injured plants we counted in each plot, or we assume non-glyphosate resistant, and the number of non-injured plants, which we assume are glyphosate resistant. And we compare those to the expected values that we assume in each mixture. In the 50-50 mixture, you expect 50% of each. In the 100% conventional, you would expect almost all plants show injury, and then the opposite in the flex mixture. Now, because we want our observed values to be the same or non-significant from what we expect, we do not want to reject the null hypothesis of the chi-square. This is a summary of the chi-squared data from the 50-50 mixtures, and the table on the left is the 7-day ratings and the 16-day ratings on the right. And down here below, you see the summary of our chi-squared null hypothesis decision. And we do not want to reject the null hypothesis if the screenings are accurate. And I've highlighted here, you see the timing 1, rate 2, timing 2, rates 2 through 4, and timing 3, rates 3 and 4, all had a rating where we did not reject the null, and they seemed to have accurate phenotyping. However, you'll notice on the 7-day, or the timing 2 ratings at 7 days, we actually rejected, but at 16 days, we did not, suggesting that for at least these treatments, the accuracy improved at the 16-day rating, suggesting the 16-day may be a better time to rate the injury. Now, we identified those as potential candidate treatments. We want to see if that phenotyping accuracy also held up in the flex and conventional mixtures. And this is just the 16-day rating data. And you see here the timing, all timing 2 treatments either rejected the null in one of the two mixtures. So we dropped those as candidate treatments and just focus on the timing 1, rate 2, and timing 3, rates 3 and 4 treatments as a accurate phenotyping treatment, and we'll assess the damage of those in a second. Now, for the transgene testing or the presence of glyphosate-resistant genes, we use lateral flow strips, ELISA, and we tested for 2 commercial traits, the Roundup Ready Flex and the Glytol trait. And in our selected susceptible plants, we, as I mentioned, we tagged 5 plants at each rating. We tested for the trait in the susceptible or injured plants. And the 16-day rating, all plants contained no traits. So our phenotyping was 100% accurate, selecting against the trait like we want to. However, 2 treatments at the 7-day ratings actually had some misphenotyping, and the accuracy was only 60%. 2 of the 5 plants actually did contain a trait and were misidentified. But in those treatments at the 16-day rating, the accuracy improved up to 100%. All the plants we selected truly were non-resistant, again suggesting the 16-day rating may be the best time. Now we want to look at the damage assessment. This is data collected from those tagged susceptible plants and the 50-50 mixture plots. And we're looking at bowls per plant and the average bowl size. You see the untreated control and the timing 1, rate 2, there is a numerical but actually no significant difference in the bowl number or in the bowl size. However, the timing 3, rate 3 treatment had a severe significant reduction in both bowl production and bowl size. And the timing 3, rate 4 treatment actually produced no harvestable bowls at all in the 50-50 injured plants. So this is showing the timing 3 treatments seem to be pretty severely devastating to the reproduction, whereas the timing 1, rate 2, not so. We see the same trend in the seed and lint yield data. This is collected on the full conventional plot, so how damaging is this treatment to a whole population of susceptible plants. And you see the same trend, the timing 1, rate 2 treatment had no significant difference from untreated control in seed yield or lint yield. Since this is a breeding program, the seed yield is most important to us. We want to harvest enough seed to advance generation. Whereas both timing 3 treatments severely, significantly reduced the seed yield and plant yield. Now, we harvested the seed from those selected injured plants and tested the seed quality. The seed index weight, or weight of 100 fuzzy seed, there was actually no significant difference between any treatments or untreated control. So whatever seed was being produced was most likely possibly mature or full size. However, as we saw in the seed yield, there still was a large variation for the amount of seed. Not all treatments produced enough seed to really advance the generation. In seed standard germination data, we saw the same trend as in the yield and bowl data. The timing 1 rate 2, although numerical, had no significant difference or reduction from the untreated control in seed germination, whereas the timing 3 rate 3 treatment had a severe significant reduction in seed viability, and not even 10% of the seed were germinated. And the timing 3 rate 4, again, didn't even produce seed for us to test. So in conclusion, it is possible you can use a sublethal rate of glyphosate to visually see the difference between glyphosate-resistant and non-glyphosate-resistant plants. But the application timing and rate of the glyphosate, as well as when you do your ratings, always play a role in the accuracy of the screening. The application parameters of the timing and rate also affect how severe the damage is going to be to your susceptible plants. The chi-squared data suggests the timing 1, rate 2, and the timing 3, rates 3, and rates 4 treatments were the most accurate for phenotyping. However, the plant mapping yield data, as well as the seed quality data, suggests the timing 1, rate 2 is the least damaging of these treatments and maybe the best candidate treatment to use. However, before we move on any further, we need to finalize the collection and analysis of this year's 2015 data and further validate the results. And with that, I would like to thank our research funders, Seed Matters Initiative, to the Cliff Bar Family Foundation, and the Crease Hatch Project, TEX09297, my committee, Dr. Jane Deaver, Dr. Glenn Ritchie, and Dr. Peter Dotre. The cotton breeding crew has helped me with all my research, All Tech Seed, for providing the seed, and my fellow tech students and AgriLife colleagues. With that, I'd like to take any questions. Yes?
What stage in the breeding process would you propose using?
We're suggesting that this would be for early generation testing. So as soon as you can. Most traits from the past contain, there's Roundup Ready, with most of the commercial. So if you, in the F1, the Roundup Ready is not going to segregate from the Bolgard yet. So then you can, if you're testing as soon as possible, maybe you can avoid catching it before it segregates. And also, in the future, the commercial standard seems to be that all of the traits are going to utilize glyphosate as a selectable marker. So hopefully this continue to catch all traits in the future. So really we're looking early generation. Yes, ideally, yeah, probably, because you might have the Bolgard segregate out from the F2, and so then you're going to be pulling out the glyphosate resistance, but maybe not the insect resistance. Yes?
Would there be
Yeah, so in this study, actually the cultivars we used were the same genotype, just one had gone through the trait conversion process for the flex gene only. But when you implement in this breeding program, obviously there's going to be huge genotypic variation. And actually it was quite nice, as this year I was helping work on a preliminary data for a glyphosate drift study, and we looked at different producers' conventional genotypes. And even there at the commercial line level, we saw some variation for injury. So I assume that that'll be some of the future research we need to do, is does this screening treatment, the accuracy hold up across all genotypes? So I assume there will be some variation, but hopefully it'll still work pretty well.
Okay. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.